We also got a lot of questions from our docs about neratinib. You know, you hear about that, for example, with HER2 mutations, where you see that with lung cancer, for example. What about neratinib and just metastatic breast cancer systemically?
Well, you know, now it's approved as the extended adjuvant therapy, so it is possible to get compassionate use neratinib in the United States for patients who have refractory HER2-positive disease. But this is a drug which is tough in patients who are very beat up with multiple lines of prior therapy, and diarrhea can really be a big issue even when you're using prophylaxis because people don't want to be constipated. Neratinib is going to come out with a voucher for cholestipol, which is very well tolerated, seems to control the diarrhea very well in the extended adjuvant setting. What it does for patients in the metastatic setting, I don't know. And we will see results from the NALA trial at some point, which compared neratinib to lapatinib, both combined with capecitabine. So that will help us a lot in terms of being able to understand how best to use it.
Sarah, any comments about neratinib and your experience, and also cholestipol? I'm not sure I've heard about that with neratinib specifically.
Yeah, so the control study we presented at San Antonio, the interim results, which was a study to look at whether we could control the diarrhea rates with neratinib in the adjuvant setting in particular. And there were several cohorts. One was a cohort of just using plain old antidiarrheal Imodium. And then another cohort was cholestipol, and another one was oral budesonide, which is a steroid that has just GI activity. It's not absorbed systemically. And the rates of grade 3-4 diarrhea went down to 11% in the cholestipol cohort, which is a big reduction. So this may be something that we should be doing clinically. Of course, more data is being collected. That's my biggest reticence in using this agent sort of systematically for my patients, is the diarrhea is substantial.
So, George, what about HER3? I haven't heard about that before.
So, preclinical data from Harvard, from Rakesh Jain's lab there. If you treat a HER2-positive tumor with a HER2-targeting agent, one of the things that happens specifically in the brain is you get huge upregulation of HER3. And in preclinical models, if you now target the HER3 and continue HER2-targeted therapy, you get, if you're a mouse, therapeutic benefit. And so this raises the question of whether or not this something similar is going to occur in humans, and whether or not co-targeting of HER2 and HER3 for brain mets might be a reasonable approach.